Hello, I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl.
G'day, ballers, and welcome to the Baller NRL Supercoach podcast. My name's Jono, coach of Hungry for More, and in this episode, we're going to be doing a deep dive into the players that tend to intrigue super coaches the most at this time of year, the mid-rangers. We're going to be going through the ones that we think are great value and could boost your team, as well as the ones that we think you should avoid. And with me to do it are a couple of mid-range price super coach experts ready to put out premium value. The first of which, he comes in a mid-range price. Everyone knows that with this super coach, he has one of the highest ceilings in the game. But coming with that is one of the lowest floors. Many Supercoach punters tip that this is the year he puts it all together and lives up to his potential. It's the coach at Tubes Pods, Tubes!
How good, Jono. I'm getting introduced first. Does that mean I beat the next guest? I thought you did it on rankings. No? All right, there we go. I'm happy to be here to talk about mid-rangers. There's plenty of options. And I had a plan last week where I was looking at a guns and cheapies strategy, and all of a sudden my team's full of mid-rangers again after the trials on the weekend. So yeah, it's a good time for the pod.
Jeez, what about, you know, you coming in so hot again that the power went out of your house and you're almost in danger of being a late pull out of this pod, but here you are, you're fired up, you're ready to go.
I am ready to go. Power out. So there's been an incident with the garage door due to the power being out that is now going to require things to be fixed. You could say that I'm coming in so hot that I had to muscle my way through the garage door to just get on this pod. So I might need to build Baller for that.
I'm sure Baller Tower's looking forward to that invoice, Tubes. Our second guest tonight, look, he's priced at a mid-range due purely to his role. He's a PPM monster. Whenever he's on, he does a great job. We're thinking this is the year he gets bigger minutes. He's the coach of Toya Story. He's also my Nepo brother. It's Cracker. How you going, mate?
Yeah, good. I was feeling good until the little Nepo comment got put in there at the end. But excited to be here. I think mid-rangers is a fun, very fun topic to talk about. So stoked to be on for the first time this year. And yeah, looking forward to it.
How's your team coming along? How many drafts of Toya Story have there been pushed out there so far? Constant?
Yeah, pretty frequent tinkering. Like, I think there's a bit of a core group now that's settled in their place for now. But there's been a lot of, ins and outs, little tinkers here and there as news is broken. Or obviously with all the chaos of last week, a lot of things changed. But yeah, it's starting to come together, but it changes by the hour.
Nice. Well, Cracker, I noticed you're in the Ballers Only Discord affair, but if you want to come and join us, it's baller.live/discord. That's B-A-L-L-R. Cracker, you're in there. We've heard Tubes' thoughts on the Discord. He's in there a lot himself. How are you finding it? How's the community?
It's unreal. It's so good. It's very active. There's always a lot going on in there. It's a good place for news as well. People are kind of, every time they see something on Twitter or X or they hear something, people are posting it in the group. It's always good discussion. Bit of back and forth, wouldn't call it arguing, but some discussions are had between people in the chat, and it's always good. People are voicing their opinions, and yeah, it's really, really fun community to be a part of.
Yeah, and respectful as well. Respectful arguments, which is what you want. You don't want the hive mind. You want people having different opinions. It's what we're all about at Baller.
Speaking of hive minds, I didn't get the memo of the hat and beard combo for tonight.
I can tell you that I jumped on without a hat on, and I haven't been to Turkey like my brother, so the light above me was just bouncing off my big bald head.
And I couldn't see. You had to go get a hat for our eyes, Jeeves.
And I got to say, my wife saw me grabbing a hat and said, "You can't wear a hat inside." I said, "Trust me, it's better than what's going on in there." I got a jacket on.
I forgot about Jono's turkey trip. That's why he always wears a hat. It's just out of habit. But anyway.
All right. Speaking of baller.live, B-A-L-L-R.live, we can't say exactly what's going on, but there are a couple of big things in the pipeline. I know they posted on their social, say a get ready post, so keep your eyes peeled on that. And I do believe that major league announcements are coming very, very soon as well. So make sure you, keeping your eyes peeled, get over to baller.live, sign up. It's free to join, and you're going to get yourself a ton of extra content and stats and as well that Discord. So please get in there. Now, fellas, for our listeners, full disclosure, we are recording this on Monday. We normally record on a Tuesday so we can look at the team list Tuesday, but we are recording a day early this week. So look, what that means is we're not going to go over the team, the trials this week, but tune into the Sunday Snap this Sunday where Tubes and I will be doing a big deep dive into all those Supercoach relevant players, won't we, Tubes?
I think we will. You and Dan debuted last week, so, I mean, I'm waiting to get the call up for next week's Snap.
All right. Let's jump into our big baller blueprint topic for this week. People might be sick of hearing it, but we're not sick of talking about it. These 2026 stat changes. And look, I know a lot of people are just starting to engage with the Supercoach season. So for anyone who doesn't know, they have changed their stats provider. It's traditionally been Fox Sports. This year they're going with a different company, which is run through the same ones that do the NRL website. What that means is that the try assists are changing. We're going to be finalists. Whoever throws the last pass gets the try assist. So big push for centres. Doesn't favour the fullbacks in that regard. And also third man tackles are back. So some of these workhorse tackle bots are getting a big boost as well. And what I want to know from you two is I've been doing a little bit of thinking over the weekend and last week. And now that the stat changes have settled, I'm starting to wonder if maybe me and others are overreacting to the impact that this could have on Supercoach when setting up our initial teams. I looked at a squad that I had, my last team build, still currently this way, Dylan Brown halfback, Jackson Purgy 5'8", Keanu Kinney and Sua Fa'alongo as my fullback. So I just started thinking, am I giving away too many points? Like, I get that these fullbacks and halfbacks are overvalued, but should I still be trying to make it a priority to get a couple of them in there? Tubes, what do you think?
I think there's two parts to it. The first is just genuine cash generation and team value. So if you look at it from the strategy always being get cheapies in, get them to build cash, is still going to be a method that you need to follow. But if you don't pick up the value picks early, and we've talked a lot about what they are, but they're obviously the meat and potatoes men in the forwards that are going to get more tackles, and the third man in people and the hookers and then the centers from a center wing point of view that are just going to grow in value. If they're 30, 40, 50K underpriced and you're not getting that value early on, you could find suddenly come around the origin period, your team value is $1 million less than the top sort of super coaches from that perspective. And you might be going okay points-wise, but you're not going very well from a team value perspective, which is very different to how it's been previously. So I think that's the first point and happy to talk about that. But then I think the second point is that people can overplay it on, well, what is the right way to do value and where do I put my money? So everyone starts putting their money looking at suddenly the one of the top owned center wings is Herbie Farmworth, Kay Aliro, Val Holmes, all of those type of center wings and looking at those gun options, which was sort of the initial strategy. But maybe that is overcomplicating it as well. And so I think there's a little bit, you've got to find the right balance between the two.
Cracker, what are your thoughts? Feel free to take on anything that Tubes is thrown in there as well. What do you think of this?
It was very, very, very eloquent from a man who's been through what he's been through tonight. I don't have I feel like he's really nailed it. I think the key word at the end there was balance. Obviously, as Tubes said, you need to generate cash. You need to bump up that team value, but then, don't know, you and I were talking pre-pod, like guys like Cleary and your out and out guns, like, yes, they are most likely going to lose a bit of value, but not a lot. If, you know, there's genuine superstars and you're going to be banking a lot of points, and if you're behind at the beginning of the season because you've just gone so hard at mid-ranges or cheapies, just purely focus on cash generation, it might be too late by the time you increase that team value to make up ground. So I think traditionally you want to try and get a premium halfback, a premium fullback or two. Maybe this year it's not getting three people, but you can still definitely a chance to get one or two and put yourself ahead, especially because some of them could be really pod given everyone's prioritising the mid-rangers.
Tubes, can I put you on the spot? How many, like, and when I'm talking premium, I'm talking like at halfback, Jaden Campbell, Nico Hines, Nathan Cleary, at fullback, Scotty Drinkwater, James Tedesco, Reece Walsh, these kind of level of guys. How many of those level of players do you anticipate starting in your team this year? And which ones are you looking at because you don't think they might be as overvalued as others potentially, and you're still going to get those big points?
I think I'll have one. if of the people that you just mentioned. I think part of it is that you've got to, it's been the Podfather's tried and true method for the last couple of years, that it's big boy season at the start of the year. And I think that is going to be even more inflated early on. And remember, when we talk about value and value creation, there's also the opposite effect that is going to occur with these fullbacks. So I'm not, there's starting the year, and then there's what your team looks like come week four, week five, week six, and yeah, that can be very different. So I'm looking at a premium halfback. I'm not looking at a premium fullback. The highest I could go to would be like a KP, just because of he had such a bad year last year that I still think he is value, although watching that Knights pack on the weekend does make you a little bit skeptical of that. But sort of sitting around there. But where I do think I'll be spending up is I won't be having any or many compared to previous years of mid-range options in that sort of pack. So I'll be looking at a gun hooker like Harry, likely. I'll be looking at a dual gun front row, and I'll be looking at three, possibly four, as a minimum, gun second row forwards to start the year. So you've got to find the right balance, but my plan at the moment is stack that area. Yeah, I'll still potentially have one or two good center wings, but I'm still sticking to the normal cheapy center wing option and really stacking the pack to start the year. So I don't know if you consider them premiums or not, but, you know, Haas, Lucas, Harry Grant, obviously Yeo's spoken about a lot. Like, there's a lot of premium guys there, but not the other ones that you mentioned, I suppose.
Yeah, Tubes, as Crackers, I think you're speaking very eloquently on the topic. It's not clearing it up for me. I still feel like, even as you're talking, my brain keeps going in different directions. I can't quite shake Nathan Cleary, fellas. Like, 826K, I think he's going to come into a season. He's currently at 23% ownership. We'll see where that lands. I can't quite shake the feeling that Penrith were rubbish for 10 weeks last year, and the way he finished the season from there on in, like, if you wait too long to get him, you get up to that origin time of year, and then when do you get him through that? So I just can't quite shake him. The other one I keep coming back to is Tommy Turbo, who's just under that 700K price tag, 690K. I think with no DCE, he's going to just get his hands on the ball a ton this year. And I think that if he's fit, you know, I know he's going to lose a few try assists and line assists this year, but they're the two that I just keep coming back to. Cracker, any last thoughts on this topic before we move on?
Not about individuals, but I think a point that Tubes made, disagreeing with Tubes, not apparently, but I think there, as Tubes said, there's a big difference between your starting team and then these guys in like week five, six kind of onwards. I think when you ask the question, are we getting carried away? Maybe some people are, but I think as long as you have an eye towards this is just my starting side and I want to get to those guys still relatively quickly once they drop in value, then you're probably not getting carried away if you've got an eye to those early moves.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
The only other thing I'll just put to that is I think it's important to look at the runs as well. So there's been an overreaction to how well Scotty Drinkwater did on the weekend, and obviously he's a highly what appears overvalued under the new system. But the Cowboys' run is ridiculous to start the year. So looking at that and looking at that fly. But on the converse side, Johnny, you mentioned Cleary. The Panthers do have a very hard run. And obviously you can say he's going to touch the ball more, he's going to be better, but it's just going to be, they're going to be tight fixtures to start the year. So from a probability perspective, he's just not in for those really, really big scores. So you're sort of getting him to hope that he gets the 80s and 90s rather than, you know, in round 7, 8, 9, 10, and when they have a better run, that you're getting him in hoping he's getting the 150s, I suppose. So it's just, that's, I think you need to still factor in what their run looks like as well as their upside when thinking about that.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a purely Tubes for you just looking at, oh, what's the difference with these stat changes from last year and just picking guys based on that. There is more to it than just a pure, this guy's overpriced by 6 points per game or this guy's underpriced by 6 points per game. There is more to it than that.
Like, it's ridiculous to think, oh, Herbie's just, he's going to average, the stats say he's going to average 6 points more. Well, the stats say that because he had a lot of try assists last year. Like, that doesn't mean he's going to start the year with a lot of try assists. If you thought he was overpriced before, you should still think he's overpriced. And that's contradictory to what I said on the pod 3 weeks ago, but that's how I've come full circle in my thinking on these things.
It was 1 week ago, Chiefs.
1 week ago, geez. It's been a lot of Supercoach thoughts since then.
All right. I love it. I think it's a really interesting topic. I think a lot of people are just kind of simplifying it too much. Maybe we overcomplicate it too much, but I really enjoyed what you boys had to say. Right, let's get into these mid-rangers. And when we say mid-rangers, we're looking at the guys who are kind of in that 400 to 600K range. And we're going to start off with hooker, which is actually a sneaky, interesting position this year. We've spoken a lot about Harry Grant and that we think he's a fantastic option. We've called him a must-have several times. But there are some other guys who are cheaper than him who look primed for a big role. And I want to start off with the two Roosters boys who are both mid-range hooking options. One of them is Connor Watson, who's also available at second row forward. The other one's the new signing, Reece Robson. Cracker, you are the Roosters diehard fan. I just want to hear, what are your thoughts on, I mean, obviously, you know, you're not there at training. You're just using your own speculation. But how do you see Connor Watson and Reece Robson's role potentially playing out this year?
There's how I hope it goes, and there's maybe what Roto will actually do. Connor Watson, I love him at lock, and I think most Supercoach players love him at lock. I just love him there from an NRL perspective. I think he will get pretty big minutes there. I don't think he plays his best footy at hooker. Obviously, he does a really good job of it. But I think for the Roosters' best side, he plays big minutes at lock. It's just a case of with Reece Robson, we know he can go 80. We know he's got a huge motor, and that would be amazing for Supercoach. It's just a case of whether, because we do have the option of Connor, we have Benaiah Uelu, who played really well off the bench last year. Does Trent Robinson want to kind of push Robson to that 80 minutes every week and potentially burn him out? So that's my only kind of pause there. Like, both of them I've been really keen on at different points during the preseason, but I think the fact that I have to keep kind of second guessing what I'm even saying here about minutes probably tells you all you need to know, that you kind of need to wait and see first. But they're both potentially really good options depending how that those minutes kind of shake out at the beginning of the season, especially kind of with that dual as well is so handy.
Yeah, because I think if you told me they both, like the ideal Supercoach role, I imagine, for both is Reece Robson just playing 80 minutes. And if he's an 80-minute hooker, yeah, I know he's going to be a bit of a dish man out to those dominant halves of the Roosters. But just from a tackles perspective, it's going to be pretty good. And then Connor Watson, if Robson's playing 80 minutes at hooker, Connor Watson's probably playing 60 to 65 minutes at lock, in which case he's also massively underpriced. Like, he spent a lot of time at hooker last year. I don't know, Chips, what are your thoughts on these boys?
I can't get around any of the Roosters hookers to start the year, purely just based on not having any idea what Robbo's going to do with that rotation.
Yeah.
And they're, for me, very easy. If you compare them to Harry, you know what you're going to get from Harry or Brayley. But if it turns out they do get an 80-minute or a ridiculously good role, then that's an easy sort of bring in round four, round five, for the remainder of the season, or round three, you know, from that perspective, if you're looking to get before the price rise.
If it comes out that Robson's getting 80 minutes, like, he's in. Like, I'm putting him straight in. Like, hooker isn't the most exciting position as it is, and I know Grant's undervalued, so that's why I've got him in my team currently. But if Robson's playing 80 minutes, I'm keen.
Well, I mean, there's a bit of Roosters fandom coming out there, like, it is all a bit meh, but I think we're going to go through a few where you could say the exact same thing. If they get 80 minutes, that's it for me based on their price as well. And I'd say Robson's at the higher end, nearly 500K than what some of these potential 80-minute hookers are going to be.
He's a good third man in tackler though, Robson. But look, I think there's a big chance that if roles work out in a certain way, Chiefs, we could be sitting on the Sunday snap after round one and having Connor Watson down as a ready-to-explode player if he could just get 65 minutes a lock. But I agree with you, fellas. I'm just going to watch and see how it all pans out. I'm very happy with Harry Grant instead of going close to those guys at those prices. Chiefs, one that you always come back to is Appy Korosau. I think he is always interesting to you from a Supercoach perspective. Is he interesting this year at 541K?
He definitely is, but he just has the round one bye, and it shouldn't put you off. And to be honest, he was in one of my early draft teams before these rule changes. But now that this position's become so much more popular to think through, I think that he could be one of many good hookers to own. And just that round one buy throws me off just enough. We also don't know with Dewey, it sounds like locking down the half position, what's going to happen with Samuel Afainu's minutes. That could be good for Appy. Obviously, that he could come on and play that lock role we've seen him play through the middle before. There's enough doubt there in my mind. Will he kick? Will he not kick with Dewey? There's enough doubt there that him not starting round one is enough to put me off him from that perspective.
Yeah, I think one thing we haven't mentioned is that I think we're all going to start Harry. And then as your hooker two, maybe not. As your hooker two, I just don't think you want that much money invested in hooker. Mm. I think, like, especially when the cheese is there at such a cheap price. So I think that's too much for me. I just want to give a public service announcement, a PSA, I believe, on Sam Smith. He's 8% owned. Let's get that down to 0%. I don't know what people are hoping for here. Let's even put aside that the Knights look rubbish on the weekend. I already thought he was a massive avoid. He's priced at an 80-minute-a-game average. I think he had like one game off the bench last year for the Roosters. The rest was starting 5'8", playing 80 minutes. He averaged 14.4 points per game from goals last year. It was an incredible kicking season. He might kick again, but I just don't see how he's in any way value at 506K, playing for a worse team, maybe not goal kicking. I'm feeling like, Tubes, even you can't push back on that one.
No, he's not going to be playing first grade, so take him out of your team.
All right, let's get down to two of the kind of lower end mid-range hookers, Jakey Sitkin at the Seagulls and Reid Marnie playing up at the Cowboys this year. They're very similar in price, only 4K difference. Jake Simpson, 422K. Reid Marnie, 418K. Now, these are guys I find interesting because Reid Marnie looks set to play 80 minutes. When he's done that in the past, he's a better player than what he's priced at. Maybe not significantly, but he is better. And Jake Simpkin had really good numbers in his 80-minute games last year. So Jake Simpkin, he last year averaged 62 in his 5 80-minute games, with only one try across that stretch. What are your early thoughts on Reid Marnie and Jake Simpkin, Cracker? Have they been in your team at all?
They haven't, but I assume these are the two guys Tude is referencing when he made the good point about if guys are playing 80 minutes, you might want to go for the cheaper guys. Reid Marnie definitely interests me. I think you just made a point about Appy that you're not going to have him at hooker number two because if you've got Harry Grant there, you're not going to spend all that money. Reid Marnie is someone I reckon, if you wanted to take a bit of a punt, you could make him your hooker one with the cheese and then spend up elsewhere. I think he can be pretty creative, Reid Marnie, as well. Like when he was at the Eels in his peak, like he was such a weapon of a player in origin circles and talks and things and just behind some really good hookers at Queensland there. But I don't know. I liked the way he looked on the weekend and 80 minutes. There are drafts of my team where he's there and Harry's not.
Cheers.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because there's a couple of options with these two. The obvious play is going to be Harry to start and then Cheese on the bench for most people, and that's going to cost circa 850K. The other option could be looking at starting with Jake Simpkins and Reid Marnie as your two hookers and sort of interchanging the two, and you're spending the similar amount of money. There's a bit of risk with the cheese. Obviously, it doesn't feel like risk at 200K, but we've seen before where you get stuck with that sub 300K hooker on the bench and they're just very hard to get rid of if they're not growing in value. But specifically on the players, the point around Jake Simpkin is if you look at that Manly top 30 squad, they've only got one other hooker in the top 30.
Who is
and
it?
His name's, I think, Zadius Mugatutia. Don't quote me on the pronouncement. He played New South Wales under 18 City representative last year. So I imagine he's a 19-year-old. He hasn't come through the ready to explode areas as yet, so I can't imagine he's a touted such a future gun that he's going to be taking huge minutes as a 19-year-old in first grade. I could be wrong, but I just think that feels like Jake Simpkin could be in for that 80-minute or a more guaranteed 80-minute role at Manly. And you mentioned before that he averaged 62 in 80-minute games. That was prior to, obviously, the rule changes. We know he bumped up a couple of points from 43 to 45 with just the stat changes. That isn't including his 80-minute performances. So you could be looking at a 66 average in person that plays 80 minutes at hooker that's worth 415K. It feels like a pretty viable option to start the year.
I will just point out that producer Gramsci has mentioned that Zach Docker-Clay is with the Sea Eagles as well. Didn't play on the weekend in the last trial because he was playing in the All-Stars game. So Zach Docker-Clay, a chance coming off that bench. But I agree, Chiefs, if Jake Simpkin is named playing 80 minutes, I think it's a really strong start and a good option as well. All right, let's get into – sorry, Crackershot, did you have any last thoughts before we get into front row forward?
Not thoughts on the individuals, but thoughts on the idea of starting with one of them instead of Harry and saving a bit of money. It's becoming more tempting to me the longer that conversation went on. Not so much the two of them. It was innovative thinking from Tubes, but starting with one of them, starting to appeal to me a little bit.
All right, let's get on to the front row forwards. And we've spoken a lot about Toby Couchman, a.k.a. Touchy. Look, I think there's nothing too much more to add. He's well-priced. He's one of these guys who's a good third man in tackler. His stat differential goes up by 5 points a game. It's just about if you're confident he's going to get that 60 to 65-minute role at the Dragons. Leo Thompson's an interesting one, putting aside the fact he had a calf concern on the weekend and was late out of the All-Stars game. He's been discussed. I just don't get it. I think he played last year 55 minutes a game. He's priced at 542K. I guess that it's exciting when guys go to new clubs, but I just can't see him suddenly becoming a massively Supercoach relevant player. One Tubes that I know you really like is Jermaine Hopgood at 517K. I know you noticed a bit of a role change there at the Eels in the second half of last season. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Well, he moved to prop, didn't he? It was a pretty obvious role change for everyone. But obviously, he was an extremely dominant lock in the Supercoach statistics world when he burst onto the scene a few years ago. And then he's had some injury affected seasons. And then I feel like last year he started it at lock. It felt as though he was a little out of favour by Riles, but then I think it came out that he was just carrying these ongoing back injuries. They signed Dylan Walker and to sort of play that ball-playing lock role, and Hopgood moved into the forward position. So I think we haven't yet seen Hopgood play because he was out this weekend due to the birth of his child. But he'll be back next week, and if we can lock down what that Eels rotation is, anything over 60 minutes in the middle, like, he's just, you know what you're going to get from him from both an attacking upside ability, but also just a million tackles and offloads.
Tubes, your rugby league eye test and vibe test 100% passes there. So just to give you some stats to back up what you said, Hopgood played the first 16 games of last year at lock. He averaged 46.7 in 47 minutes. The remaining 8 games of the season, he moved to front row forward. He averaged 65.4 points per game in 63 minutes. And there was only one try and one assist in that stretch. So it's not like it was a super, he suddenly went on an attacking run. It was because of him getting more minutes and moving into the front row. I guess the question is, Cracker, because the numbers are good. He's very cheap. Do you feel confident he's going to be playing that 60 to 65-minute role in that Eels pack?
No, I don't. There's quite a few mouths to feed coming off that bench. They've got 80-minute back rowers at the club, so the rotations are going to be coming through the middle. but as Tubes, like with those points, I moved Couchman down to him today. Because of the, $70,000 difference in price, still a jewel, and with what he is capable of, he excites me. But we, as Tubes finished with his point, we need to see it. We need to see what it actually looks like. And if he is playing 60 minutes, I'll be taking him over, sorry, not Couchman, over Touchy. He'll be in my team over Touchy if the minutes are there.
All right. The next one I want to be Stefano Uddukamanu. If you want to hear a very deep analysis of him, please go back to our most intriguing players pod, where we kind of spoke about how he changed pre and post origin. I still think he's a really good option, 515K. I think the role that he's going to play is probably a little bit more set in stone than Jermaine Hopgood. I think he's clearly going to be a 55-minute guy, and he has very good points per minute, Stefano, and that remained good when he got bigger minutes last year. So if you're a believer in his role as kind of the alpha dog of the Storm, I think you could do a lot worse than Stefano at 515K. Cracker, yesterday the All-Star game, I know you watched closely on Trey Mooney, because you were kind of saying to me pre-pod in the green room that you kind of almost don't want to have Trey Mooney in your team. You keep trying to find ways not to get him, but then everything you see of him suggests that he just should be in your team.
He looks so good. He looked really, really good yesterday. Yeah, so the price is awkward. Like, he is at a bit of an awkward number there when there's so many cheap second row forwards and front row forwards that are good options, like your Colquhouns, your Lasardis of the world. He's at that little bit more, but he looks really, really good. We know he's been stuck behind some really good forwards at Canberra over the last few years, but looks like he's going to take on a big role at Newcastle, and he's back in my team after his performance yesterday. I just couldn't ignore what he was doing.
Jubes, any other thoughts on either Trey Mooney or the front rows I spoke about, or anyone else who piques your interest?
No, I've got Trey Mooney in the team. I think he is awkward, could easily be a front row forward two, and if he's your front row forward three, I think that's acceptable as well. I think that he's pretty close to a must-have from a mid-range perspective. The only other thing I think I'll just mention, because I'm back in the baller boot blueprint, I made a case for starting with the more premium front row, second row forwards. And a lot of these ones that we're talking about, whether it's Hopgood, Stefano, et cetera, if a lot of them are role dependent and how they start the year, it always feels like a luck box, like there's four ones that you could pick, and then it turns out one or two are the right ones. And that's where I think starting with premium guys in the front row, if you know, oh, well, then I'm going to downgrade one or two of these to whichever mid-rangers end up popping off to then upgrade in the fullback or halves situation as well. That's where I think you're just setting yourself up for a bit of flexibility come round four, five, and six.
Yes, and I think a lot of what you said is going to be very applicable to our next position as well, because 2RF has a lot of these guys. We see it every year, and I've fallen victim to it many, many times, and I might again this year, mid-range 2RF. So I've had seasons where I start off with four of these guys, and one of them work out and become the keeper you want them to be. The rest, you're finding ways to sell, or they hover around in the Supercoach team till like round 16. You can't get rid of them. Let's see if we think that applies to any of these guys and which ones we do really like. The kind of biggest kind of former premium guy who's fallen into that mid-range is Britton Nikita. Again, we did do a big deep dive into Nikita on our most intriguing players pod. Tubes and I spoke about how we think he's a great player, but he didn't seem to be getting through as much base plus power work at the Sharkies last year. He does get a little bump from these stat changes. Cracker, do you have any strong thoughts on Britton Nikita?
Not as strong as you and Tubes when C-Mac brought him up and you both blew raspberries at the camera. I need to see. I thought he played really good yesterday, really well yesterday, and he was really good at the pack champs at the back end of last year, but we just got to see it with the Sharks and see what his work rate's like. But he's one you could, as Tubes just said, you could downgrade a premium to him if he looks like he's finding that peak form again and work rate.
I'm very interested in Cameron Murray. Now, with these stat changes, we actually don't have any data on him because he played one game last year off the bench for 20 minutes coming back from his Achilles, basically set out the whole season. He's priced at 548K. When he has been a 65 to 70-minute player, I mean, we know he's just one of the best locks in the world, but he also is a great worker and a really good Supercoach player. I'm just not sure. Like, I think he's going to get a lot of these third men in tackles. I think the data would like him. But Tubes, how do you see his role playing out in a pretty strong South forward pack? Do you feel confident to start the year he's going to get the big minutes you'd want to see?
No, not at all. Like, I just have no idea. And that's what we were saying as well about the cheese earlier. Like, how does he impact? Like, I'd say that one of the cheese's best attributes is his 20 minutes through the middle. Yes. And that's as well as the rest of the South Sydney pack. is Jai Arrow playing on an edge with Fifita being there, or does he go back through the middle? Like, they've just got such a stacked pack. Obviously, Talis Duncan, he played in the All-Stars game on the weekend. He was almost, you could call him a revelation for the Bunnies on an edge last year. Obviously, played a bit in centre. I love Cam Murray and think he's one of the best forwards going around from an NRL perspective. But at the same time, he's still coming off an Achilles injury and he's had an injury-riddled couple of years. I think they'd be crazy to be trying to run him out for 70-plus minutes with a pack like that. And I'm going to need to see it before I potentially look at bringing him into my Supercoach side.
All right. Sean Bloor is one that Danny Boy spoke a bit on the Sunday Snap this week. We were talking about Atu Lasardi playing a little bit of both left and right edge, and where's that going to land with Eli Katoa out for the season. Cracker, you'd kind of already taken note of that and had a little bit of interest in Sean Bloor. Talk us through that.
Oh, well, just when you guys brought him up on the Snap, I did have a think to myself, I wonder if they will switch him over to the right-hand side to work with Jerome Hughes. And as that thought originated in my head, Danny Boy then said it on the podcast. And I just think if he does go over there, he does become quite interesting. I think on the left, like, he's obviously a very good NRL player. I think he's a bit of an underrated NRL player because he's on that team with Eli Katoa. The new scoring system likes him. He's got an increase there by 3.8. But yeah, if he moves over to the right, I'll take a look. But if he just stays where he is, I think his price is pretty much where he is, other than that small uptick with the new interpretations.
He did show signs at times last year of being like a really good, genuinely really good first grade player. And he certainly has a more dynamic running game and attacking game than Atu Lasardi. So, yeah, we'll see how it all pans out. If he comes out this weekend and plays on the right edge outside Jerome Hughes in their final trial, I bet there's going to start to be a lot more Sean Bloor chatter coming around in Supercoach circles. Choose one guy who I know, he comes in hot just like you. Leka Halasima. You owned him last year for a bit of a stretch. What are your initial thoughts on Leka? Could you touch him at 500K?
No, I couldn't. I as you said, I owned him last year for a fair chunk of the season. I might have even owned him twice. Like, I might have taken him out and brought him back in as a pod move. I'm not sure, but I do think at that starting price, even if he has locked down that back row starting position, which I think he should. But again, that Warriors pack is stacked. Barnett coming back in, Ford sitting there, obviously not back rowers, but that means, is it Nakora doesn't run through the middle as much? Or what is that? Capewell's still sitting there. There's a reason they probably played him in the centres. They're trying to work out, well, is there any way that we can have all these players on the field at the same time? But I do think if you look at his 80-minute performances last year, I'm not saying that he didn't go well, but he was just such an attacking machine when he was coming off the bench that I felt like he lacked a little bit of that from an eye test point of view playing the 80. Now, he's obviously only, 19, 20 years old, so that could easily step up this year and he could be an out-and-out gun, like, you know, that explodes and becomes a 700K player. But I just feel that's a risk. There's too many downside options for that to pay up for that 502K.
Especially when like guys like Isaiah Yeo and Angus Crichton are only 100K more. David Fifita's 17K less. I think you're right, Chubbs. He's a wait and watch, which seems to be the trend with a lot of these mid-range second rowers and front row forwards. It's wait to see the role.
You know, I looked it up because I knew someone burned me last year. I owned John Bateman as my mid-range second row forward last year.
Start.
Old Johnny Boy Bateman. I think I paid 520K and I think that has me going never again. Like this 500 to 600 range, I just can't do it. But the thing is they get you. Like, they get you because they go okay. Like they're not that, They go just okay enough that they're not causing you huge problems that you need to get them out of your team by week four or week five. But, geez, yeah. Anyway, Johnny Boy Bateman.
I'm surprised your garage door didn't get broken three games into a Johnny Boy Bateman ownership last year.
No, I had the pod to take it out on him.
Question on Leka. if he gets named at centers again another trial and gets given dual, does that change anyone's perspective on him?
If he's named to play center in round one, do you mean?
Well, if he plays center again in the second trial, is there a possibility that Supercoach gives him
not unless he's named to start?
They'll wait to the round one team list before they do that kind of thing, unfortunately. So
we'll forget I said anything. Move on.
No, but it's still a fair point.
I mean, it's a fair point, but even then, I'd still want to wait and see just because of what we talked about with the center wing position this year and there being so many value picks at center as it is at the moment. But that'd just be mouthwatering. Imagine he played three games at center to start and then actually was a gun 80-minute back row and you could just have him, to flip between center wing and 2RF. That's like the dream.
All right, let's get into some of these Dragons mid-range second rowers. And Danny Boy and I had a big old deep dive on this on the Sunday Snap. And our basic thoughts were when it comes to Luciano Leilua and Hamish Stewart at 420K and 402K, respectively, was just a void. We just think that the minutes aren't going to be clear enough. Jaden Sewer seems to have an 80-minute edge spot locked up at the Dragons, and you just can't be confident these guys are going to get the minutes. But Cracker, I was at a Valentine's Day dinner, actually with a voucher bought and paid for by Tubes. Cheers, Tubes. It was a really nice dinner. And
Happy
I was
Valentine's
getting text
Day.
Messages. Thank you. And I was getting text messages from Cracker that were more hot and heavy than what was going on at my Valentine's Day dinner, the way he was talking about Luciano Leilua. Have you cooled your Jets, Cracker, on that? Or are you still looking at him as an option?
I think he was in my team 15 minutes after kickoff in the Charity Shield. You hear all these stories, and you guys have referenced on the pod, like the training they asked down, all that stuff. As soon as I saw him on like the dressing room camera, I went and looked at his price, and then I saw him have like four hit-ups in the first 3 minutes, and he was just running so hard. And I was like, oh, he's in my team. And then you spoke to me with a bit of logic. I cooled down a little bit and I took him back out of my team. But geez, he looks so good. He looked unstoppable on that edge. So again, with probably being quite repetitive this podcast, but want to see the minutes, want to see the role. if he's getting 65, 70 minutes, he was unbelievable the way he played. And his attitude, like he's a bit of an attitude guy, Leilua. Like he can be lazy, he can clock off. He looked so locked in the other night. Now the challenge for him is, does he maintain that level of locked in for a long NRL season? But geez, the signs were good.
Tubes, what do you think?
I think I liked your chat on the Snap about it with Dan. I think one of these Dragons second row forwards is going to be elite. And I don't know which one it is. But at the price, you could back in Luch at 400K and just take that flyer on him. Like, I think he's like, because he's on pretty decent money there coming from the Cowboys. And we did see this with Corey Horsburgh last year. Like, sometimes they just do get a tap on the shoulder, they lose weight, they get bigger minutes. That doesn't mean that the offload goes away, that doesn't mean that the strength goes away. There's a case there that he could be the mid-ranger to start the year with, and he's not 500K. He's, what'd you say he was, 414 or something like that?
420.
420. So that's quite cheap, and if he doesn't end up having the role, that's still an okay price to potentially get up to a more premium or go down to a cheaper option. I don't think it's the worst having one mid-ranger for all this chat that we've said. It's just about picking which one it is. For me, he's probably the clear-cut front runner if he gets named to start there in for Vegas. You could easily take a fire on him at that price.
Opened up his numbers. Sorry, Jamie.
No, I get it.
I've just opened up his numbers from the other night. He had 12 runs, 108 metres, 5 tackle breaks, 3 offloads, 20-odd tackles, which is just only one miss. And when I was watching, like, it looks like every single hit-up he had his arms free. Like, he actually pulled the offload in a few times. Like, I can see him getting quite a few line break assists off those offloads and things. He was poking his nose through every time. I'm back on later.
I was going to say, you're talking yourself back.
And, and, And yeah, it was against reserve graders, but he's done that for against first graders for, you know, for years. Like he definitely has that offload in him. It's more about is the fitness going to help his defense? Because he's been lazy historically in the past as well. And yeah, I mean, we've seen Brother BJ have enormous seasons when fully fit. It could be Luch's year.
All right, that's enough Luch chat. But I just want to quickly gloss over Jermaine McEwen, who I thought, if you'd have asked me a week ago, he'd be one of the focal points of our mid-range second row forward chat. But Knights just didn't look good. He came off the bench, didn't have a great trial. I think he's an absolute weapon. I think he would turn it around, but I'm just not confident again he's going to get that role. And the last one is for me, Chubbs. You said Luch for you is the front runner, mid-range, second row forward. For me, it's Hill and Lukey. I think the reason I like him better than Luch is because his pack that he's with is just nowhere near as good. Luch has that Dragons forward pack, which is just stacked with young gun players. I just can't see how Lukey doesn't get huge minutes for the Cowboys. The other back row option seems to be Sam McIntyre, maybe John Bateman if he's back and fit before the season starts. And Tubes, you'll take a look at him. But Jeremiah Nanai is still 8 weeks away. And I think Hill and Lukey, put all that aside, rugby league eye test, I reckon he is a gun. Like he's a proper premium high-level footballer. And I'm trying to find ways to actually get him in my team. At the moment with how my cap's balanced, I just can't quite get him in. But I want to. What do you guys think, Cracker, of Hill and Lukey?
Yeah, I mean, he looks incredible. Like, he's from the first time he burst onto the scene, there was already Origin talk about him, like, straight away. Like, he's clearly very talented. We know the injury history. I agree with what you're saying about the more certainty in his minutes. Priced awkwardly. Not in my team at the moment, but he's on the watch list.
All right, let's get into
Tubes is laughing because Luciano's worth more money than him.
I'm not. I'm just laughing because we're doing a mid-ranges pod. And it's the fifth time you've said priced awkwardly. It's like I'm a little bit annoyed you bypassed Jermaine McEwen, so I couldn't get in my Jermaine McEwen gag. I think Lukey's a very good option, Jono. And unfortunately, we're going to be having the same, you know, chats around round four when he's just not in the side anymore. He's
injured.
He's just too injury prone for me. And I'm sure you can make that case for a lot of people, but I'm happy to see him put four or five up together and pay an extra 100K for him until he puts five first grade games at 80 minutes together on the trot.
All right, well, let's get into halfback where there are some very intriguing options. The first one, who I kind of feel has been under-discussed in our baller pods so far this year, so let's change that now. Adam Dewey, who is priced at 556K, available at halfback only. Last year, he played the majority of his games at centre. So when you're looking at these stat differences, he actually gets a little bit of a bump compared to most halfbacks, but that's probably because he spent the majority of the year playing centre. So he got a few assists that have come his way with this new stat changes. 13 games at centre, averaged 51. 8 games at 5'8 lock or halfback. And in those games, he averaged 66 when he started getting his hands on the ball a lot. And that includes a game where he actually fractured his cheekbone and only played 15 minutes for that average. So in those 8 games, that average 66 is pretty impressive. Obviously, Tigers on the bye in round one. Cracker, when we're talking about these halfbacks who are going to, you know, lose a little bit of value, do you potentially have a shot at Adam Dewey, who is arguably undervalued because you've been spending all that time at centre?
I'm bird by him because I brought him in that game for the 15 minutes cheekbone game last year. So he's still a bit of anger and resentment there. But I think, you know, Dewey's one of those guys that's always been so talented and has been a bit of a victim of his versatility. I think the idea of him having a full preseason at halfback, like knowing what his role is, the potential to be goal kicking, I think he is pretty appealing option, to be honest, especially if he does get that goal kicking. I don't mind him. I don't mind him as a bit of a play. He's someone I've had a look at and had him in and out of my team a couple of times, and I know there's been a little bit of support for him in the Discord as well.
Yeah, producer Gramsy loves him. Tubes, what do you think of Dewey?
I think he's a fantastic option in a position where we know there's going to be a lot of overvalued players. I think there's two things to think about with halfback. One, a lot of the halves are overvalued because of the changes in stats. And two, this year, cheap halfbacks like Atkinson and Sanders are going to find it harder to have really big scores to pop off and actually be real value creators compared to actually just, you know, in previous years, there might have been halves that like Sandon Smith that go on and get 100 plus in a game. I don't see Sanders or Atkinson doing that. So you could start with a mid-ranger. I was thinking of Dylan Brown as that option at halfback, and I think Dewey's an actual much better option. It's just the round one bye. Like, do you start with, and if you're planning on starting with any other Tigers, like a Ko-poo-poo or something like that.
Yeah, and obviously with that round one bye, you then probably going to have to play an Ethan Sanders or a Dan Atkinson, because you, if you're getting Dewey, it's most likely as your halfback one, I would say, for the majority of people. So I don't know, how comfortable do you feel playing those guys? It's interesting. The more we talk about it, the more I'm thinking about taking a flyer on Adam Dewey. Another one on the list is Mitchy Boy Moses, who's at 543K, definitely at a discount compared to previous years. Now, of nearly all the halfbacks, the stat changes were actually the harshest on him. He's losing nearly 7 points a game when you take out his line assist, try assist, and try contribution. So that sounds rough, but on the flip side, he's hitting goal kick last year. So he's losing 7 points a game, but in 2023, his last full season, he got 13 points per game from goals. In 2022, he got 13 points per game from goals. So there actually is a case that even though those stat changes don't seem great, that with the goal kicking coming back, he's still undervalued. Cracker, could you start with Mitchy Boy Moses?
Yes. I think you just kind of pointed to it. Then before this all happened, a lot of people were talking about getting Mitchell Moses. How exciting is it to be able to own Mitchell Moses at this price? And then everything happened with the stats and the changes and people have kind of gone cold on him. I think kind of leads back to the discussion we had at the start of the podcast and overreacting. I think from the points that you've just made there, like, I still think he is somewhat undervalued based on what he can do and the player that he is. Like, again, though, injuries, like, he's just so prone to injuries. That's a bit of a risk, but I do think he's undervalued, and I do think he's a good potential starter this year.
Tubes, you're giving me an aura that you completely disagree.
Oh, just me and Cracker obviously hang out in different circles, because before these changes, a lot of people were more saying, geez, I can't believe I have to own Mitch Moses this year rather than I get to own him with that excitement. There's enough question marks in it for me. He's not one of my boys, Mitchy Boy Moses, and I'm happy to not own him and ride that wave. I feel like I just feel like he's always going to let you down. Like, he's always going to disappoint you, and I don't think he's worth bringing in. He's not an elite super coach halfback, and yeah, that's pretty much all I've got to say about it.
Is there something to be said for the Eels just as a team being a lot better this year? Like, do you think that plays into it at all when you're considering
him? Why are they going to be better? I mean, we could get into this, but, like, why do people think Jason Riles is a good coach all of a sudden? Like, what's changed? Like, they kicked Lomax out the door. They got rid of Dylan Brown. They lost heaps of games last year, and then they won a few and it didn't matter at the end, and all of a sudden they're going to be heaps good this year. Like, I mean,
wow.
It's a weird narrative.
I just think like a lot of people think they showed some really good promising signs last year when they were losing
games. They're very
good
at managing the media, Parramatta. They're very good at managing the media.
Wow. I didn't expect that to be the turn this was going to take.
No, I love it. Clip that up, Greasy. Last halfback, fellas, is Dylan Brown, who has moved from the Eels, Tubes' most hated club in the NRL, to the Newcastle Knights. And Cracker, you floated the theory in the Discord the other week, just before the weekend, in fact, about potentially running with Dylan Brown as halfback number one and Jackson Purdue as 5'8 number one. And I really liked it. I put a bit of thought in it and went, yeah, I can see that, and made my team structured in that way to see how it looked. And I liked what it gave me in a lot of other positions. And then I watched the Newcastle Knights play on the weekend. And then I watched Dylan Brown move from the left, where he spent his whole NRL career and representative career, over to the right. And it completely put me off him. I'm trying so hard not to overreact to a game of like a trial game of football. Tubes, can you set me on the straight and narrow?
I've taken him out of my team now as well.
No.
And I just think it made me similar to what we've said about, I want to see it. I want to see him going well. I want to see how it goes. We know he's a premium player. He'll be a 700K 5'8 if he finds his groove. Similar with Kalen Ponga. But that pack just, it. I mean, they've got Trey Mooney to come back into it. So that we're holding a lot of hope for Trey Mooney to turn things around from that side of things. So, no, I can't. I'm happy to lay a bunch of Newcastle Knights other than their, you know, Dylan Lucas maybe and Trey Mooney.
All right, let's get down to a really important position and where a lot of mid-range has been discussed. It's the centre wing. I just want to start off by saying I'm definitely not overreacting to stat changes in centre wing. I think it's such a small sample size. We're looking at one season's worth of data and seeing these changes, and there's chances that some of these centres, like, for example, a Brian Kelly, who's just, he's going up 6 points a game. Like, I'm not going to be changing around philosophies because Brian Kelly threw a few last passes last year. And it goes down to other guys like Isaac Tungo as well. Like, he's relevant. A lot of people like him. He's going up 4 points a game with these stat changes. He did get a lot of try assists under the NRL system last year. I don't care. Like, I just don't. I think he's a good player. I like Tungo. But there's going to be a lot of fluctuation with that. And it's 4 points a game. We're talking, what, the value of $40,000 over the course of a season based on some stat changes. I'm definitely not going to be overreacting to some of these guys. For me, it's going to come down to a lot more. I need to see the role and what I like for the team and their role, as well as the stat changes being beneficial. What do you think about that call, Tubes? Am I maybe underthinking it?
It is hard to say. I think if you go back to one of our early preseason pods, Matt sort of said that the stats say different center wings will often pop off. And I don't think that that's going to change just because of the thing. There are some proven ongoing Supercoach guns. Like Val Holmes is one, and he's done it for many years. He kicks goals. And I think that he's a fairly safe looking option from that side of things. But these mid-rangers, I just find it difficult to try to figure out which is the actual best one. I've flirted with Isaac Targo in my team on the right side with Penrith, and it just all feels a bit grotty sort of bringing any of those ones in just for these, as you say, just for the stat changes.
All right, well, let's start to talk about some of the actual players themselves. And Stephen Crichton, speaking of role changes, on the weekend played on the left edge. Bronson Jerry moved over to the right. I believe Kikau, in an interview after the game, said that they just wanted to see how it looked. It looked fantastic. Stephen Crichton goal kicking with these stat changes, potentially getting more last pass assists, and on a left edge, which is really dynamic. It was ticking a lot of boxes for me, Cracker.
Yeah, 100%. I was already strongly considering Tridder before the change to the left, and it just looked, they looked outstanding. They looked so nice together, the duo or the trio before Burton went off. I think he's very, very hard to ignore, especially with that goal kicking all but locked in for him. He's probably going to be in my team after the weekend.
Tubesy, I know you texted me saying you loved the Stephen Crichton chatter on the Sunday Snap. Did he potentially move into your team?
I didn't know we were talking about him in this mid-range. He's a premium, get him out of the mid-range, put him in the premiums because I'm locking him in my team. Like, he's an absolute gun of a football player. We all know that. If he's moving to the left side, which – why would they trial him there if he's not? Like, as in, it wouldn't make any sense to just, oh, let's just see how you go. Like, just have a crack. So he's playing on the left. He's kicking goals for the Dogs. I think he's an absolute lock as a premium centre wing at 600K.
I think the Dogs just like playing a few little games, the Dogs players with the media, because I know Crichton was asked, I believe it might have been by the guru, the rugby league guru, was asked if he was going to goal kick this year, and he just kind of gave a funny answer. So I think there's a chance that some of these Dogs boys just aren't wanting to give too much away. They do have the round two bye, but I think he's a fantastic option. And I think maybe for round two bye, it puts people off. It makes him even more attractive for me. Brian Tor, who we actually spoke about on our must-haves podcast, I think it was 3 weeks ago. I felt like it was 3 months ago with how much has changed since then. He's 598K. Now, from this stat changes perspective, he's going up 2 points a game. I just think there's a big case that due to the way things kind of played out last year with his injuries, he was playing hurt the majority of the season. I think that he's the kind of guy who these stat changes don't matter much. To me, he's still undervalued by potentially 6-7 points. Oh, I just did 6-7 without meaning to. 6 or 7 points again, Brian Tor. I think now he's being a little bit overlooked because of everyone trying to find these centres in his place. What do you reckon, Tude?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think he's definitely an option at 600K. I don't know what it was last year. Like, they weren't going looking for him with the ball. Like, their attack just it wasn't clicking for Big Bad Brian. And as you said, whether it was the injury effectiveness and he was sort of limping around, but he's a base stat machine. He plays for probably one of the top four teams in the comp again this year. And I think he's going to be on the left wing outside of Casey McLean by all reports. So, he's definitely, I think, undervalued for where he'll be during the season. The thing that stops me for him to start is, as I said, just the run of the Panthers and the upside of how many tries he's going to be in for. It might not matter, but that's sort of what pauses me a little bit to start the year.
Cracker, I want to pass to you now for Robert Toyer, the namesake of your team, Toyer Story. He's a pod that you're taking serious consideration of.
Yeah, I really wasn't. I hadn't even though I named my team after him, he'd never gone near it until I kind of started doing a bit of prep and research for today's pod. I just think he is one where obviously going back to these changed numbers, he's up 4.9. He's got silky hands. I think we all kind of, because of the season he had, like, it's easy to forget he was a rookie. He debuted last year and ended up having this crazy season where he played Origin, really announced himself. I feel like he can only get better coming into another whole preseason, locked down that right edge spot for the Roosters. He's got the NRL top try scorer from last year outside him. He's got silky hands. I don't know, when I was doing that research today and looking, trying to separate all these mid-rangers, he really jumped off the page to me, and it could be my Roosters bias, but I just think he's such a good player and he's only going to get better.
It might be Roosters bias, but I agree. He doesn't seem to me like the kind of player who's going to get second-year syndrome. How often does a young centre come in be one of the best defensive centres in the competition, which is what Toyer did? And I actually think at times it felt like he was playing within himself a little bit. There were occasional moments where we got to see glimpses of what his running game could be. It didn't happen often. And I think there is a chance, Cracker, he just absolutely explodes. I'm not going to touch him because I just think there's guys who I feel more confident in at a similar price, but I do like it. Tubes, did you do look quite intrigued at Robert Toyer. I wasn't going to pass to you for him, but you seem to like what Cracker was saying.
I like the thought of his silky hands. I don't want Toyer to start with no. I was a bit intrigued by your statement that he doesn't look like someone that had suffered second year syndrome. I don't know any like gun rookie that people think will have second year syndrome, but it obviously can happen. Like, people watch tape mm-hmm. on him, people understand whether he goes off his left or his right. Not me, because I'm not grinding that Roosters tape from last year. But I do think that if I had to guess, I'd back him in for a regression this year rather than an explosion.
Selwyn Cobbo, I'm not going to unpack him on this pod because we've spoken about him at length on previous Baller Pods. Go back, listen to the most intriguing pod. Listener, myself and Danny Boy talk about him on the Sunday Snap from earlier this week. If he lands on the left wing for the Dolphins outside Herbie Farmworth, which is now looking more and more like an if than it was before, he's a fantastic option. The left wing's a gold mine at the Finns. Look, let's look at Isaac Tungo, Tubes. Can you just give us a brief explanation? You said you don't mind him on that Panthers right edge. What is it that you're liking about Isaac Tungo? Because I kind of rubbished him a bit earlier.
Well, look, I don't mind him in the sense that he's had pedigree for a few years and then went off the boil like as well for a couple of years. So I do think when you look at his stats from last year, they were down. He didn't look as good, and then sort of came a little bit better back at the back end of the season. Dan thinks he was doing some good stretches and pull ups or some strengthening in the gym, but the tackle breaks definitely came back. I think that his game, as you mentioned earlier, is very reliant on Nathan Cleary and how dominant he is with the ball for the Panthers. He's on that right edge. Cleary's on that right edge. We know the Panthers' shape is likely Yo first receiver, sweep out the back to Cleary, Cleary on out the back out to the right. That could either be a Dylan Edwards or Isaac Tungo. And then you've got the upside of this center wing. So if you're looking at that 500K player, you could make a case for any of these ones going on a flyer, but that was sort of what intrigued me. And if he did get back to his best from a few years ago, he's a bit of a fallen gun with a bit of upside.
I'm going to throw two at you here, Cracker. Stafford Toa and Moses Sully. Of all the center wings in our mid-range list, these two with these stat changes seem to benefit the most. Stafford Toa's average goes up from a 49.5 to a 58.5. He goes up 9 points. Moses Sully goes up 7.3 points. Those two are by far the biggest. It's basically coming down to getting the last pass for these try assists. Are you a believer that with these stat changes, Stafford Toa and Moses Sully could become relevant this year?
I'm gonna steal from you a little kid back here. Stafford Noah for me. It could just be like a Tigers thing that he's kind of out of sight, out of mind for me. But that number's incredible, but he just doesn't, I don't know. He just puts a bad taste in my mouth. He doesn't appeal to me in any way. Moses Sully, I did enjoy him in the Charity Shield the other night. I thought he played pretty well, but again, they were playing against the reserve grade side. There is a potential to go the Luciano Moses Sully left side stack in your team if you were all in. And as I keep saying, Luciano's getting me excited. But no, realistically, I don't think I'll be looking at Sully in my team, but would not. He's the kind of guy that's got a lot of talent. He can go on a big run. Would not surprise me if we're looking at him after a few weeks and he's got a really low break even. But no, I wouldn't be touching him to start with.
Chiefs, last one for the center wings, Campbell Graham, who's 431K. He's going to be over on the Rabbitohs' right wing if they run out as expected for round one. He, in the past, has been a 650K center wing gun who can score tries, huge base plus power. Why has he not been more highly discussed when he's coming in at 430K, Chiefs?
I think it just feels like he's been injured for two seasons. And because of that, he started last year as a very popular option and I think didn't perform to people's expectations, was carrying injuries and then got injured again and was out for the season. So similar to what I probably said for Lukey, it feels like you want to see him back to his best. I know that that might mean that you miss a couple of price rises, but he's not at 400K. If he absolutely killed it to start the year and he had a huge negative break even, you can bring him in round three. If not, you can cop a couple of price rises and still look to bring him in a sub 500K if you believe that, you know, he's an option from there. It's hard when you open up the Supercoach app and he still has that red dot next to his name, you know, ongoing back issues, and you're reminded of that every time you look to bring him in your team.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually sad his last couple of seasons on the brink of playing for New South Wales. I actually think that when Bradman Best got his debut, Campbell Graham had been the 18th man, and then Bradman Best got moved in, then there was injury. So, you know, he doesn't get hurt there. He makes his Origin debut. Now Bradman Best, there's plenty of guys in front of him. But I'd love to see him turn it around this year. He's not going to be in my Supercoach team. Fellas, I realise I missed 5'8", probably because there's not that many to talk about. But let's just start with Jackson Purdue. He has had a lot of chatter on our Baller podcast, Chiefs. You made a big case for him kind of last week when we looked at the Cowboys team and saw him named at the centre. I'm assuming, Chiefs, what you saw on the weekend just kind of elevated that in your mind.
I think he's the only 5'8 option available, basically. Like, unless you want to start the year with Pezzett as one of a dual cheapy strategy, I think he's the most viable 5'8 option, assuming he gets named in the centres, which it looks like he will. And anyone can go and look at any game he played in the centre wing last year and the stats that were around for that. Plus, you get this increase in the centres. The Cowboys love to go left. Any points that are coming off Drinky from last year are basically going to Purdue at centre for those try assists as well. Yeah, which is big. It's like 12 points or something. I just think he's huge. I think he's big value and in a position that looks pretty dire, I think he's a must-have.
I know Chiefs teams might be running a bit of tape on him for his second year. There might be a bit of second-year syndrome about to hit Jackson Purdue. You never expect it, but it happens to him.
It does. Not to like that Purdue. Honestly, I think I called Purdue a mini KP in preseason last year, and he's living up to it. So we'll clip up that take at some point, put it in the Discord, which I'm known for.
Let's add him to the list of guys that you wish were the Sharks fullback tubes, because yeah, he would be a freak. Cracker, Cody Walker, he actually technically doesn't fit into our pod. He's 399K. There's a lot of people talking up Latrell Mitchell, Dave Fifita. He's going to be on that left edge with them. You don't think you could get him?
Oh, like absolutely. The potential that left edge looks like it's going to be so dynamic, but it's Cody Walker. Like he's likely to ping his calf running down the tunnel onto the field for the first game. So I can't touch him until I see he's fit and he's stringing some games together.
Yeah.
But if he is fit and stringing games together, the price is unbelievable. And like we know what he can do, but I desperately need to see it before I touch him.
Also, I will not own Cody Walker this year. Like he could be be like looking unbelievable. I'm just never gonna own him.
Clip that up. We'll see if that comes back around at some point this year. And also make sure, I don't think I mentioned Dave Fifita in the second row forward, maybe because he's just such a clear must-have. Everyone owned Dave Fifita.
He's just everyone's got him.
Final position is fullback, and it just got a little bit more interesting yesterday with Ben Dobbin out of Queensland Triple M reporting that Trey Fuller might be set to play fullback. Obviously, it's just reporting, nothing locked in. By the time people are listening to this, they'll probably see that trial teams, and they might have a clearer picture on that than us. Trey Fuller, 559K, he's definitely underpriced. Like, obviously, even with fullbacks coming in with their role change, just due to the way he's kind of come in. So last year, he in his games, I do have some stats on Fuller. He's priced at 57.2. He averages 76.7 in his 14 starting games at fullback in the NRL. So that's kind of downgraded due to a lot of time coming off the bench as well. I am locking Fuller into my team. I think he is must-have territory with Keanu Kinney, who we'll talk about. If he starts at fullback in round one, I'm locking him in, 100%. Cracker?
Ditto. He's in. If his fullback is in, nothing else to really add.
Tubes?
Yep, same. I'm just gone.
Bang. All right, 3 from 3. Jai Gray. Let's act now for a second, because if we go off that, we may as well not talk about anything else, because we're just saying Trey Fuller and Keanu Kinney are the way forward. Let's just pretend for a second that Trey Fuller doesn't get fullback and that the Hammer does. Jai Gray at 560K. He is obviously a really good NRL player. He's got a great work rate. I don't think I think the biggest weakness in his game at present is his ball playing ability. That's the area of his game he really needs to work on. So I don't know about how he's going to go with these assists, but the flip side is he's not that negatively impacted by the stat changes because he didn't have that many try assists that he's exactly getting downgraded from. Tubes, at 560K, looking to play in a much improved South team, does Jai Gray interest you at all?
I don't think so, and only just because he doesn't – like I don't see that he's going to be huge value. Like that he's got a huge amount of upside from that point of view. And so I don't see him transitioning to a gun. Like we're talking about Trey Fuller or we're talking about Kinney. There's the potential that you don't even trade them out of your team. Like that they have the potential to average mid to high 70s, even into the 80s. Like Jai Gray, you'll be happy if he bumps to averaging 65. This year. And I just, it doesn't really excite me enough in that fullback position where I know that we've talked about getting value and all those things, but you do need to get points out of the fullback position as well.
Cracker, Suafa Alongo is the other one who has come in and out of my team personally a fair bit at 511K. I am interested in him. He's obviously playing for the Melbourne Storm, who are a very, very good team and will continue to be a good team this year. He is at that price, kind of, you know, priced at around that 51, 52 average. In his 7 games at fullback in 2024, he averaged 64 points per game. That was obviously 2 years ago. You expect that he's going to have improved as a player since then as well. In his career for Q Cup, he averages 64. They're not massive numbers, but they're also, you've got to say that he's a raw player who could considerably improve this year too.
Yeah, I think the word raw, I think just I've had him in my team over the last couple of weeks because of the price point and the things you just mentioned there. But he always makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. Like I don't look at his name in my team and feel fully confident. He's very volatile. I think he can go big, but he can also go really, really low. So I had him in there based on our baller blueprint conversations we had about fullbacks earlier. And as soon as that Trey Fuller news broke, he was gone for Fuller. Sorry, I know we just said but pretending Fuller's not there. if Fuller's not there, there's still a big chance he's in my team because of the price. But he doesn't fill me with confidence.
Yeah. And look, the last one's just Keanu Kinney, the absolute biggest must-have in all the Supercoach. Get him into your team. I don't think we really need to discuss
that. What did he average, 72 or something like that in his only year? 2 years ago. Like, yeah.
Debut year at fullback, and he just was a gun. And, yeah, he's a freak. He looks so good in the All-Stars
game. And then averaged over 100 for New Zealand that year, basically, in the World Cup or whatever it was. Like, he's just so good.
He is an absolute weapon. All right, that is a real deep dive into the mid-range players. Hopefully people enjoyed that. Hopefully it helps with people building their Supercoach teams. The next podcast in your feed is going to be the Sunday Snap, which, as we said, assuming your power works and you don't have any garage door issues, it'll be you and me back on the pod doing a big deep dive and reacting to the final weekend of trial matches, because hopefully we get a lot of insight. The Tuesday show next week is a big one. It's going to be our first proper Teamless Tuesday of the year. It's going to be round zero for the Vegas teams, Teamless Tuesday. Now that we have a little bit more information, we've been purposely saving the cheapies for last because we want to get a little bit more info. So next week we'll also do a bit of a deep dive into the cheapies as well. And please keep joining into the Discord. Keep sending us your team, asking questions, having a chat. Join us at baller.live/discord. And we really appreciate everyone who's watching on YouTube, leaving us comments, liking it, subscribing on Spotify and Apple. It is massive and it helps us build the podcast. And we say it nearly every week, but we really, really do appreciate it. Tubes, Cracker, this has been a real treat for me, just getting to talk. I almost forgot we were doing a podcast. Just got to talk about my favorite hobby with two of my best mates. It's been a real treat for me tonight, boys.
No, it's been good fun. I've had a lot of fun coming on for my second ever appearance. I do apologize to all the balls out there, as Tubes pointed out, that I kept referring to mid-rangers as awkwardly priced. but it was very enjoyable. And as I said off the top, they're interesting to talk about, those mid-rangers. So thoroughly enjoyed talking through it with both of you.
Yeah, it would be like jumping on the Premier's pod and keep pointing out the guys are expensive.
It's not expensive.
Tubes, anything else from you, or do you just want to bring us home, mate?
No, it's been a pleasure, Cracker. Another big PPM performance by you. You're a bit awkwardly priced for the ballers, so we'll see if we can get you back on for another one. But you beauty.